This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run, 7:19 a.m, Wednesday the 16th of December, and in about half an hour we're going to be speaking with longtime political commentator Dr. Bridget Welsh on Budget 2021's passing in Parliament. Now, we're also running a poll on this subject, asking whether the fact that the 2021 budget has passed means that Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's position is now secure. Let us know what you think. Your options are yes, no, not sure, don't care. 51% so far have said no, it's not secure. If you have answered our poll, do comment as well to let us know what you think. But in the meantime, we are turning our attention to the subject of regional security, because COVID-19 has had broad repercussions on all policy areas for Malaysia, and regional security is certainly one of them as well.
Yeah, when we talk about this, we're talking about defence and security. Analysts were predicting that 2020 would be a transformative year for Malaysia's regional security outlook, especially since the tabling of the first ever defence white paper in December of last year, setting forth the country's 10-year defence policy. We all know what happened next. The twin crises of political change and the pandemic upended the best of plans here. And a recent paper published by ISIS Malaysia reviews the development of Malaysia's regional security outlook over the past year, and we're going to take a look at that right now.
We are indeed. And joining us to discuss this is the author of said paper, Thomas Daniel, senior analyst at ISIS Malaysia. Thanks for joining us this morning, Thomas. So how has the pandemic impacted Malaysia's defence priorities and mobilisation?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for having me. So the pandemic hasn't really transformed, but rather added further stresses to existing priorities and challenges when it comes to Malaysian defence priorities. And I think this can really be distilled down to the resources that we allocate to our security forces. So, you know, right now in this pandemic, we have the military being deployed domestically in numbers and at a scale never before seen in a very long time to assist civil authorities during the pandemic. We have the military increasingly taking the lead in much more higher frequency border patrols from March 2020, and more recently in a much more structured manner, even domestically through Ops Binting in May this year. And this is especially happening at sea and in the coastal areas to address perceived risks from illegal migrants and fishermen. And just for context, yeah, you know, we have about 3,100 odd kilometers of land borders and 4,675 kilometers of coastal area to patrol. Our EEZs go on to 334,600 plus square kilometers. So it's a lot of space. And this increased, sustained, very high tempo deployments are not cheap in terms of fiscal, material, and human resources. And what really compounds this is that we don't have a large defense budget, which has led to a very limited number of assets that can be deployed, especially in the maritime and aerial domains. And it increases the stress on existing assets and their crews.
Now, when we talk about the defence and security leadership, we have the former Minister of Defence, Dato' Sri Hishamuddin Hussein, who now helms the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Thomas, is this driving the more prominent role of Wisma Putra in the regional security affairs as compared to the previous administration?
I think it's going to be both a yes and a no. You know, there are a few unique factors right now that appears to give Wisma a little extra space. And I can go into that later if you wish. But however, you know, I think on the other hand, both Wisma and MINDEF are very, very clear on their respective boundaries, and they often consult and work with each other where issues overlap. I think with the FM's experience as a former Menhan, it gives him the ability to really understand and work around the nuances, both of the issues and the ministries. But that being said, the bulk of the issues in the international sphere recently that have involved Malaysia really does fall under the sphere of Wisma Putra. So the South China Sea dispute, concern on major power competitions, development on ASEAN, and even pandemic and vaccine diplomacy. So I think it's not surprising that we are hearing more from both FM and the Foreign Ministry.
And speaking of the South China Sea, Thomas, you described Malaysia's strategic wiggle room when it comes to security concerns in this area as narrowing in 2020. So how have our options for action been curtailed on this stage?
My take on this is that, you know, the main source of this narrowing comes from the reach and capacity of China in the South China Sea, which has been an absolute game changer for all of the other claimant states. And we've seen this reach and capacity extend slowly downward to the southern reaches of their opaque 9-dash line. Now, we cannot match that. Even if our defense money were up to scratch, we severely lack the assets to deploy, and they are being pulled elsewhere because of the pandemic. At the same time, China is a major economic partner for us, and some policymakers, I think there is a certain and perhaps even a rightful reluctance to do anything that would endanger that. So it's a really tough balance for this country. On top of that, the South China Sea has now become an avenue for U.S.-China adversarial relations. You have increased the U.S. freedom of navigation and overflight operations, which China has used as an excuse to justify the militarization of the reclaimed features there. And this is happening on our doorstep. Yeah. So keep in mind that Malaysia is also a non-contiguous country. It is literally cleaved in half by the South China Sea. And there's a lot at stake politically between the peninsula, Sabah and Sarawak. That doesn't make us, we're not entirely powerless. We don't have a lot of cards, but what we do have, we keep close to the chest and we play them carefully, and hopefully we play them well in the long term.
So on that note, and despite the limitations and the balancing act that this all entails here, especially when we take a look at the two major powers at play, what do you make of Malaysia's response to the perceived threats or the threats in the South China Sea, especially considering that that body of water separates Peninsular Malaysia and East Malaysia?
Okay, so a colleague of mine, describes Malaysia as a price taker, not a price setter, and that's not that probably won't go well with some people. But I don't think he's wrong. Again, that doesn't mean we're not proactive. Far from it. Diplomacy has been a main tool for us in the South China Sea dispute with all of with the claimant states, and it's something that both Wisma Putra and PMO does quite well, I think. We have always preferred quiet diplomacy with China and other claimant states, and that is something that China appreciates at least. More recently, Malaysia has been engaged in a bit of lawfare, initiating what some observers have been calling the Battle of the Diplomatic Notes. We kick-started this with our submission exactly 1 year and 4 days ago on the 12th, I think, 12th of December last year, when we submitted part of our continental shelf claim in the South China Sea to an international commission. So that really triggered, until today, a flurry of 25 submissions of diplomatic notes, letters, and even one statement by 10 sovereign member states, and all of which, aside from China, has reaffirmed that any maritime claim inconsistent with UNCLOS is unacceptable, including the 9-dash line and any claims of so-called historical rights. So I think, again, we do what we can to look out for ourselves. We do it sensibly, given the limited options, but rather stubbornly, perhaps, to the irritation of other claimant states.
So Thomas, on a broader scale, what are some of the key challenges that you see for Malaysia in regional security as we head into 2021?
Okay, two things. The first really is this adversarial dynamic between the US and China, because this is going to have major ramifications across the board, right? First of all, there's the impact on the established regional and economic security architecture that is very important to Malaysia. I'll be the first to admit that this architecture is far from perfect, but there are important elements in it that are vital to the interests of small and medium countries. Respect for international law and rules-based system, a degree of transparency, a preference for multilateral engagement, and a repudiation of might makes right. This will also have an impact on ASEAN. And ASEAN, while ASEAN does play a key role through several regional multilateral mechanisms, I think we are only able to do so because there have been no serious effort by both the US and China to sway ASEAN as a neutral party, not till recently at least. And lastly, Malaysia is a trading nation and we are plugged into the global supply chain with both the US and China. And while that means we could benefit from a degree of competition, and we have, there is also a risk that a spillover, that we will suffer the spillover if things deteriorate. The second thing really is I'm really concerned about this possibility, or rather the inevitability, that the rollout of COVID vaccines is just going to highlight further challenges in global inequality and the multiple security challenges that it will entail. I think when some countries will be able to vaccine their populations more quickly than others, and many less developed countries will struggle to secure sufficient doses, the gaps between the haves and the have-nots will be taking on new dimensions. I don't mean to sound alarmist. Maybe things will be resolved if we get our act together. but we should not be blinded to the real possibility that there are vast inequalities, and this will cause, this might deepen, and they're going to have consequences on political, security, social and economic and international relations.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Thomas. That was Thomas Daniel, Senior Analyst at ISIS Malaysia, giving us a perspective on what we can expect out of the Malaysia's regional security outlook going into 2021. Up next, a look at US politics with Bob Shapiro of Columbia University. Be sure to stay tuned for that after the news. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.